Just a couple of things to begin with. First of all, an acknowledgement of our condolences to Jean Hunter. In the circumstances, that's a pretty tragic end to the life of her husband and leaves her very, very much in a difficult position. I hope that statutory management can be changed to the extent that all of the costs of the funeral can be properly catered for. That's the least that could be done. Secondly, over the weekend, I was down in Christchurch to mark the anniversary of the first earthquake. Again, impressed with the resilience and the strength of the people in Christchurch, but I did detect there a growing frustration about things not happening fast enough and about the impact of the earthquake on them. There was a particular woman that has lost more than $100,000 in equity because the compensation does not cover the improvement in the values to her property. The end of this week, of course, we have the Pacific Island Forum. I'll be meeting with five of the international leaders that are coming across to New Zealand. And, of course, on Friday, we have the start of the World Cup. I'll be attending the All Blacks versus Tonga match. And right across my electorate, there are cars flying Tonga and Samoan flags very proudly in anticipation of those matches. So it's going to be a great tournament, and I think New Zealanders are looking forward to it.
Firstly, on the Christchurch issue, you talked about frustration. Do you think the government's going too slow 1 year on?
I think there's a degree of impatience about the slowness of the payments, the people still living in the orange zone, not knowing what their future might be, but also a sense of frustration that people were led to believe that they would have their equity protected, that as the Prime Minister said, no one would be worse off. And increasingly, people understand that that is not the fact. There are people there that will be considerably worse off.
Over the weekend, Gerry Brownlee admitted that he was wrong in giving people false hope. What did you make of that?
Well, I think that before the government makes promises like that, they should be promises that they know that they're able to keep. Otherwise, you unfairly raise people's expectations only to dash them. And people like that woman who is going to lose $100,000 of her equity and her property because Mr. Brownlee made a promise that he was not able to keep, that's very unfair to her, and she's really feeling it.
But that's only if she goes with the government's option. She could also pursue it with her insurance company.
Yeah, but as you're aware, that many people that live in the red zone don't have that option.
You say people might be feeling frustrated, but can you see any way to speed things up?
Well, I think there are certain things that do need to be sped up. One of them is skills training. You know, right back in March of this year, I was asking the government what the plans were about giving skills to the 10,500 young people in Canterbury that are without jobs. Very little has yet happened, and we've got this crazy situation of having a huge demand over the next couple of years for skilled tradespeople alongside 10,500 people not in education, employment or training. The government needs to have moved more quickly on that. We're now a year out from that first earthquake.
Is that the one thing that you'd say about how to speed things up, though?
Oh, I think there also needs to be an addressing of the problem of how long it's going to take to get that building process underway. All of the building looks likely to start at the same time, which is going to put a huge pressure on resources, whereas a staggered start to that rebuilding would have been desirable. But we do need those skills down there, and we do need to give the skills to young Cantabrians who can then contribute to the rebuilding of their own city.
Nations Associated, the Melanesian Steering Group on Fiji, readmitted to the Pacific Forum. What are your thoughts on the level of engagement Fiji should have with the Forum?
Well, I think the position has been quite clear, and it's been quite clear on the Forum in the past, that Fiji shows genuine efforts to step back towards restoring democracy, then Fiji can be welcomed back into the Forum. But the onus really is on Fiji to show that it's genuinely intending to restore the democratic process and human rights in Fiji. To date, there's been very little sign of that.
What are the implications for the stability of the Forum, given that there are differing opinions among member nations about the approach they should take?
Well, there'll always be differing opinions in any Forum. The question is how to work through the differing options that are open to it. Every country wants to have Fiji back in the Forum, but I think every country also wants to see a genuine commitment from Fiji to embarking on a process that will restore human rights and democracy in that country.
So So do you think at this point in time it's perhaps not genuine, or should they wait till after 2014 to see if those elections go ahead?
Well, I remember very clearly Commodore Bainimarama promising that by 2009 there'd be new elections. That promise was broken, and I've seen no evidence at all that Fiji is intending to restore democracy anytime soon, or even taking steps towards that.
Just on that trade, back to the earthquake, we've heard that the government is going to be looking to rebuild the tertiary college there to do exactly that, to try and train people up so that they can help with the rebuild. Is that what you've been calling for a long time?
Well, when I talked to the building industry down there months ago, they said we need confidence and we need certainty. One way of giving confidence to the industry would be to make the dole payments that are paid to people who are currently out of work available to them to take on additional apprenticeships. That was Labor's proposal. It's won a lot of support right across the community, the building industry, the Employers Federation, the trade union movement, the wider community. I think the government should look seriously at Labor's policy.
Just in terms of the quake costs and the additions pushing up the value of people's houses, if Labor won the election, would you change that policy to make it, if improvements were made on a house, people could include that?
I think the key point that I've made is that if you weren't able to do something, you should never have promised it in the first place. That was the unforgivable sin of promising to do something that subsequently the minister decided that he couldn't do at all. Labor will come out with its policy, but it won't be off the hoof. It will be a carefully thought out policy that's both fair to the people and obviously affordable.
So at this time you can't say whether you would...
Not until we've announced our policy on that.
And no. When would that...
Well, it will be sometime, I guess, in the next 10 weeks.
And with the EQC down $4 billion, further $4 billion last week, and then Friday's court decision, few hundreds of millions, how would Labor recapitalise the EQC?
Well, the EQC has to be recapitalised. That's a statement of fact. If there's another disaster at the moment, there's no money in the pot for it. We're working through policy alternatives on that. So clearly something that will help will be the higher tax rate on people earning very high incomes in New Zealand. That can be their contribution in part towards the rebuilding of Christchurch. The other is the broadening of the tax base through the capital gains tax.
Well, you've already basically allocated that money in your tax plan, haven't you?
Yeah.
What we've set out
is a policy that is a broader based taxation policy. I've talked also about the closing of loopholes. That didn't get a lot of pickup at the time, but I noticed that two orthopaedic surgeons in Christchurch had been found to be dodging their taxation responsibilities. That's no surprise to me, because the taxation working group said exactly that wealthy people could restructure their affairs through company structures and trust structures to avoid paying their fair share. And Labor's made it very clear that those people will be brought back in to the realm of paying their fair share of taxation. We don't know how much money will be brought in from that, but clearly it would be quite a lot.
Well, the reason Penny and Hooper did that was to try and avoid the top tax rate, which has now since been reduced.
I think you're being very generous about that. They weren't doing it just to avoid the 38 cents of the dollar taxation. They were only declaring a fraction of their income. They didn't want to pay their share of taxation, but sure as hell they were happy to receive the taxpayers' money while they were learning to be surgeons at the public's expense. I regard that as absolutely unacceptable.
Chris Carter's delivering his valedictory speech tomorrow. Are you expecting any more tax on you and your leadership?
Oh, look, it's up to Chris Carter what he puts in his valedictory address. I wish him well for his future career, but I'm not attempting to influence what he might or might not say. It's entirely up to him.
Do you think he's the right man for the job for the UN and Kabul?
Obviously he's been employed by the United Nations. They feel that he's appropriate for the job, and the other people making that judgment.
You pleased he's out of Parliament?
Well, he was going to be out of Parliament by the end of the year. This brings it forward a couple of months, but he's been looking for another position, and as I say, I wish him well in that new position.
Is he giving you an advance copy of his book?
I don't know whether he's still writing it or whether he intends to publish it. You'd have to ask him that question.
What did you make of Margaret Mutu's comments the other day on immigrants?
Oh, frankly, I thought they were nonsense. To suggest that you're not going to have European migration because some people are racist, is in itself racist. You're stereotyping a whole category of people. And I deeply resent the fact that people of European heritage have been branded by her as automatically being racist. That's patently nonsense. I happen to agree with David Rankin on his comments on that.
You think she should be sacked?
Oh, look, I just think that that's an entirely inappropriate statement for a person in a position of responsibility to make. You know, if I said that I was going to ban all migrants of a particular ethnicity because some of them were racist, what would you say to me and what would you call me?
Do you think she should be sacked, though?
Oh, that's a decision that's not for mine to make. There's a thing called academic independence and the independence of the universities. They must make their own decision about the appropriateness of her comments. It's not for a politician to advocate the sacking of somebody who was an academic.
If she was one of your MPs, would she be gone?
I wouldn't accept that sort of statement from any of my MPs, and nor would I believe that any of them would be silly enough to make such a broadly based and ill-founded comment as she has made. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.